point of view.
Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
Thanks for staying with us. So the other day, there were a couple of things that happened, actually. So we had the gender-based violence conference that you remember, that lasted a couple of days, and it was really, really heated. One of the people that was there was the Minister of Police, Phikicele, who was, I can tell you now, really was in an uncomfortable position. But He also announced some good news, and this stems from the stats that he had also released not so long ago, specifically also talking about the DNA testing backlog. And I thought this was a good news story, but DNA for Africa is cautioning our optimism. They're not saying he's lying or it's not true. They're just saying, look, as things stand, as we reduce the backlog, cases are also coming in. So we need to have that conversation. Dr. Vanessa Lynch is Regional Director of DNA for Africa. Dr. Lynch, thanks for your time. Am I right in understanding what your concerns are? Good evening.
Hi, Pamela. Please call me Vanessa. Yes, I think you've hit the nail on the head, is that whilst these numbers are being reduced from the original figure that was ring-fenced in November last year, which was a year ago, they're not telling us what the total number of cases are awaiting analysis in the laboratory. Mm-hmm. So, I think we need more clarity. Mm-hmm. Define what you mean by backlog. Mm-hmm. Define what you mean by the ring fence number. Mm-hmm. And perhaps what we should be looking at is just, what is the total number of cases currently awaiting analysis? Mm. And maybe on a month-to-month basis, we should be given a dashboard showing number of cases received, analyzed, loaded onto the database. Yeah. Why not?
So what I don't understand, and maybe help me understand here, the numbers that I'm seeing of the 30 stations that they've selected that say have high levels of rape cases are given around 100 million each to deal with the backlog. I mean, that's a lot of money. Why are we still struggling so much? How did we get here? Perhaps let's take us back to what got us here in the first place.
Well, we weren't actually in this position. You're absolutely right. In 2018, when I was actually the deputy chair of the oversight board, we used to have monthly meetings with the forensic science laboratory. And their turnaround time was actually excellent. They hardly had any cases in backlog. And the first few years of the DNA Act, there were over a million profiles loaded onto the DNA database. Then what happened is that they withdrew baseline funding to the DNA laboratory, the Minister of Police, the Department of Police, rather, and they weren't able to fulfill contracts. Mm. So suddenly when you aren't able to fulfill contracts and give or provide the requisite consumables to the laboratory and maintain that instrumentation, the laboratory came to a standstill. Then what happened is that SCOPA got involved and actually started investigating a number of the contracts that they were wanting to award and saying, well, these were corrupt. So every couple of months, a tender would go out and then they would say, no, we have to put it out again because of corrupt practices. Mm. So for 18 months, that laboratory stood at a standstill. And then subsequently, COVID hit. Now, crime doesn't stop because, you know, a laboratory stops and because COVID is hitting. In fact, we saw that it increased. So what happened is that this accumulated and they got themselves into a position where it became really difficult to get on top of it, which is why they keep referring to the backlog figure. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you, we're still getting a huge number of cases coming in every month.
So the money aside, do we have the right system now in place for procurement, the right type of procurement? Are we now on track, even though maybe we are obviously up against the tide? But are systems in place at least?
Yes, that's a great question. And it's not a question that people want to ask because they seem to want to always talk about the backlog. Mm. You know, we do have two laboratories with great scientists working within them. They have been provided funding. All those contracts have been fulfilled. Mm. And they are doing everything they can with the capacity. But what the problem is that two laboratories are simply not enough to service the entire country when our crime rate and our gender-based violence issue is through the roof. So we need more capacity. that's what we're needing now.
In your understanding of, you know, how the police see this, do you get the sense that we are, for a long-term plan, we are looking at more capacity, more laboratories? Are you hearing that kind of murmur?
Well, I think they are exploring it. I mean, the police are historically always really reluctant to enter into public-private partnerships, which I think is necessary now. I think we have no choice. Mm. And I know that they are building a third state-of-the-art laboratory in the Eastern Cape, but I think that's only going to be ready at the end of 2024. Mm. So there are quick fixes. We could definitely use private laboratories or university laboratories at least to maybe sample the easy reference samples, which are your simple cheek swabs, and perhaps for now the more difficult crime scene samples, which, you know, you've got chain of custody issues and complex mixtures. Those would have to remain with the laboratories. But there are ways to overcome this, and I always have this conversation. I try and have it constantly because I've come up with several ideas around the forensic pathology services assisting the police, maybe an MOU between health and SAS. And hopefully people are still listening and we can continue to push this because, you know, it's not a question of us being in competition. We can't stick in our lane anymore. We have to actually work together and try and collaborate to overcome this issue.
As a matter of principle, surely everybody agrees. Well, why then do you think there's this reluctance? And I mean, I'm not by any means suggesting that there is mischief or anything like that from the police. I'm just wondering, is there another reason perhaps that we are not, you know, we are not aware of that may be quite a genuine concern and reason why they're reluctant to work with other partners?
Well, I mean, just from a procedural perspective, our Criminal Procedure Act, there's a section 212, which specifically says that if you are going to be working with scientific evidence and presenting it in court, you need to be in the employment of the state or a tertiary institution. So this would potentially become an issue unless they amended the act or had regulations that said that this was a service provider and we got around that.
But then we can for now still work with the universities, for instance.
Of course we can. And, you know, we've one of the ideas presented, which I think needs to be spoken about more, is this new forensic pathology services laboratory in the Western Cape, which is massive, has a state-of-the-art anti-DNA laboratory, which just needs funding to fill that with instruments and to provide resources. We could be utilizing that. But that would then be okay because employment of the state, which is health, and UPT, which is a tertiary institution, could collaborate with SAPS and they would overcome that issue. So we need to have more conversations like that. You're absolutely right. And maybe more of us need to be talking about this, that it's not insurmountable. We can find ways to provide more capacity and you know, unidentified human remains. I mean, femicide is a massive problem, and a lot of these young women who are raped and murdered are not identified because we don't have the facilities or methodologies to be able to identify them.
I mean, yeah, and look, I mean, I know that it's the in thing. Everybody talks about gender-based violence and so on, but we have, if we are honest, we have cases dating back to apartheid days where families have still yet to identify their family members from graves that have been, you know, shallow and so on. So covert operations that we know of from apartheid days. And there's that, you know, families with no closure. So there's a lot to deal with.
Exactly.
Do you think the proposal that we can at least get a report every month, I mean, it used to happen, as you said before, do you think that can be back on the table again?
I hope so. You know, the thing with COVID is that the government showed their hand as to how quickly they can move when they want to and how easily they were able to provide us with information. And even though that information wasn't necessarily comfortable for us to see, the case was rising, the number of deaths, it informed us and it enabled us to make sense of it and protect ourselves. And in many ways, I think this is what a dashboard would be with a DNA backlog that we call, is that if the government are making progress, and I really commend them for that because they are, it's not difficult to just, even if the numbers are huge, to just provide us with clarity with authenticity with regards to the numbers and to show and map their progress. Mm. It is not difficult to make that resource accessible to the public, and we need to put pressure on the government to do this.
Yeah. Thanks very much for your time there, Dr. Vanessa Lynch. Thank you very much. She's a regional director of DNA for Africa. Okay, so we did reach out to the police and ask them to join this conversation, and we were not successful.
Point of View. Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.